mitzvah totally differently from the way we experience it in the States. In the States, it's basically unheard of to fulfill the mitzvah of sukkah properly. Okay? Raise your hand. How many of you regularly slept in the sukkah back home? Okay, that's what I thought. Almost no one in the States sleeps in the sukkah. We'll discuss whether there's any halakhic justification for that. But this is one of those mitzvahs where you realize it's crystal clear. Hashem gave the Torah to be fulfilled in Eretz Yisrael, where there aren't any excuses. There's no reason not to fulfill the sukkah, not to fulfill the mitzvah sukkah exactly the way it should be fulfilled. We'll also talk about what the vision, what the goal, what the spiritual experience of sleeping and eating and spending time in the sukkah is about. Let's start with that. Why do we have a mitzvah of sukkah? What does God tell us about the mitzvah of sukkah? Right? He tells us to, right, Shivat Yamin, right? You'll dwell in the Sukkot. Sukkot Teshvu Shivat Yamin. Why? Anyone remember? Another marker's here. Hashem says, I'll pass this out so you can know that I'm not lying. Okay. Don't ever trust me, at least. Okay? Hashem says in Parshas Emor, B'sukkot teshu shivat yamin. Pasuk Mem Gimel. Why? L'man yidu dorotechem ki b'sukkot toshavti b'nei Yisrael. B'otzi otam de'at Yitzrayim ani Hashem Elokecha. Why should you dwell in the Sukkot for 7 days every single year? In order that all your generations from now on remember and know what? That I caused you to dwell. When you left Mitzrayim, I caused you to dwell in Sukkot. Okay. The experience of dwelling in Sukkot right now is the re-experiencing of how we lived in the desert for 40 years after we left Mitzrayim. All right, I have a serious question about this. Who cares? Who cares? Fine, we dwelt in sukkahs for 40 years. We also brushed our teeth. We also, you know, went to the bathroom. Like, who cares? Who cares that we dwelt in the sukkah for 40 years? What? That's not like splitting the Red Sea. That's not like the Makos Mitzrayim. What are we celebrating? What do we remember? This is a machlokas. Like the Gemara records a machlokas about what exactly we're remembering when we dwell in the sukkah. So if you look at the next source, pass it down. Tanu Rabbanan. You have it? Kol shivat yamin adam oseh sukkato keva ubeito arav. That for all 7 days, you know what, actually? Skip ahead. I'm sorry. No, I'm sorry, turn to the doctor page. That's where we are. Okay. The Gemara establishes a basic principle of what you're allowed to build a sukkah with. You probably heard this from Rav Mordechai just a few minutes ago. Can't use metal as the schach of your sukkah. No. Copper wire, whatever it is. Can you? No. Why not? It's not gidule karka. One of the requirements of schach is it has to grow from the ground. Has to come up from the ground. Another thing, can you use a wooden chair, right? Source of the ground. Can you use a wooden chair as chach? Just pile it on. Why not? It's considered to be a kli, right? A artificially made object that serves a function, and therefore it's mekabel tuma. Mekabel tuma, another factor involved in whether chach is kosher or not, is that it can't be mekabel tuma. The Gemara here establishes that principle. Zeh klal kol davar shemekabel tuma. You can't use rischach. The Gemara has the question, how do we know that? Minan imili. Amar Reish Lakish, Amar Kra, Ve'ev ya'aleh min ha'aretz. The Torah describes the mist that watered Gan Eden. And this mist rose up from the ground. Right? If you ever camped out at a lake, right, you see the mist, the fog hovering over the lake early in the morning. Right? The mist came up from the ground and water the gun. Just as mist is not an object that is mekabel tuma, right? Water itself is not mekabel tuma, right? And it also comes up from the ground. So too, av sukkah davar she mekabel tuma v'gidulo min haaretz. What the heck does that do with anything? That's about Gan Eden. What does that have to do with Sukkos? So the Gemara, the next line of the Gemara tells us what's going on. Hanicha Lamanda Amar Anane Kavod Hayu. The question is, what were these Sukkot that we dwelt in for 40 years? One approach is that these Sukkot were made of reeds overhead and, you know, plastic tarp on the sides. These Sukkot were built of the Anane HaKavod, the clouds of glory by which God signified his presence amongst Am Yisrael. There's a lot more copies here. Can you pass this down? That's what the Sukkot is. Okay? In other words, when Am Yisrael traveled through the desert for 40 years, God surrounded us with himself. Wow. With himself. We were enveloped in God's presence for 40 years. We were constantly surrounded by God's revelation of his own existence in the world, something that's hard to even imagine. And the Torah describes, this is not Midrash, but the Torah itself, that this basically ensured total protection and total comfort for Am Yisrael as we traveled. The Torah says very clearly that our shoes didn't wear out, our clothing didn't get worn out. Total climate control, right? God protected us from the scorpions and the snakes and the hot sands. Basically, we were in air-conditioned comfort and protection and safety. And most importantly, not just the physical comfort, but what else? We were constantly, for 40 years, in spiritual communion with God. Right? If some of us, or all of us, struggle sometimes with the question of, is God there? Is God with me? So Am Yisrael didn't have that problem. Right? God was constantly with them. That's one approach. The other approach is the approach of Rabbi Akiva. The other approach is that these Sukkot that we dwelt in for 40 years were huts that we built, made of bamboo or palm or whatever else. But yeah, overall, God did protect us without any cover, but what we actually dwelt in were huts that who built? That we built. That we built. Why would we commemorate that? Any guesses? Thoughts? Okay. So it could be that part of what's going on here is that this is the moment when Am Yisrael began taking initiative on some level to care for ourselves. And the harder level of gratitude to Hashem, it's very easy when God does an outright miracle, right? I'll give you an example. Please God, you all will have this chus of having your own children. The moment that you hear that little neshama begin to cry for the first time when it enters the world, you don't have any doubts whether God exists. You don't have any doubts whether there are miracles. You just experience a miracle, right? The experience of having a neshama enter the world is one of the most mind-blowing. It's very easy to feel thankful to God. What about when you do something for yourself? When you work hard, whether it's getting into the college you want to get into, or getting to the unit in Sahel you want to get into, whatever it is, you work hard and you accomplish, to recognize that Hashem was there helping you out then also. When there's a mixture of your own endeavor and Hashem's endeavor, that's a much higher level. So according to the second approach, we're commemorating the fact that Hashem enabled us to care for ourselves. To take care of ourselves. That's a higher level of appreciation in things. The goal of Sukkot is to be constantly aware of Hashem's involvement in our lives. And it can go in two ways. In this machlokes, we're talking about Anane HaKavod, this outright miraculous way that God saved us. And all of us have stories in our lives where, you know, if this hadn't happened, my life would have been totally ruined. We all have stories like that. Right? Is it those moments? Or is it the more subtle moments when somehow we're able to pull through, we're able to accomplish something ourselves, right? Those are both true. They're both real, they're both spiritual realities. Which one should we contemplate? So I'm going to fast forward a little bit, but we're going to learn in a second. It's a mitzvah d'oraita to eat in the sukkah on the first night of Sukkot. And when you do so, most of the time, you know, I love Rav Uri, and Rav Uri teaches meditation, and you should all take his meditation class. So usually meditation is like icing on the cake, right? In other words, if you put on tefillin, you have a very low level of kavana, that's enough. Or if you hear the shofar and you just hear the shofar and you know it's a mitzvah, that's enough. When it comes to sukkahs, that's not enough. According to many achronim, when you sit in the sukkah and you eat in the sukkah, to fulfill the mitzvah, you have to meditate while you do so. What do you have to meditate on? The Torah tells us, "Leman yedudor teichem," so that you will know. That I enabled you to dwell in sukkot. So according to many achronim, as you eat that first bite of food in the sukkah, right, that first night, you should think as you chew that you are right now surrounded, or imagine that you're surrounded by the Adonai HaKavod, and you have to keep both in mind. But also you're remembering the fact that Hashem gave us the koach to take care of ourselves and to build our own sukkot as we left Mitzrayim. Okay, so this is not icing the cake, this is part of the mitzvah, right? That you should have in mind an awareness of being surrounded by Hashem's love, Hashem's protection, and also Hashem's enabling you to take care of yourself. And those are both things that you should have in mind as you fulfill the mitzvah. Now let's take a step back. In the States, Canada, Mexico, wherever you live before now, sukkah is a ritual, right? It's usually freezing cold. In Houston, where I grew up, you are surrounded by hostile mosquitoes and oftentimes hurricanes at the same time. It's a nasty time of year to be outside, right? And somehow we get it together so we can sit in the sukkah freezing and shivering, and we eat our meal, and we, Baruch Hashem, can get back into the house where it's warm, right? And go to sleep in our comfortable beds, okay? It's a ritual. You check in, you check out. That's not the goal of sukkahs at all. The goal of sukkah, right? The sukkot teshvu. You shall live in the sukkah for 7 days. And Chazal are crystal clear about this. You should treat the sukkah as your house. Okay? You move out of your house and you move into the sukkah. And before we even get to what you're supposed to do with the sukkah, you got to understand that the sukkah is not just about 2 1/4 walls and schach of the right kind and the right height. What do you have in the sukkah? So the Gemara is very clear. If you have cool posters on your wall, you should bring them to the sukkah. If you have a sofa, you should bring it to the sukkah. If you have a nice rug, bring it to the sukkah. If you believe in watching TV, you should bring the TV to the sukkah. Right? Everything you have in your house, you import into the sukkah. The sukkah becomes your home for 7 days. That's the mitzvah. That's the halacha. It is not, and for that reason, I love my children, and I do have some of their artwork, you know, on the walls of the sukkah, but I try as hard as I can to have grown-up art in the sukkah as well. Right? We have some friend paintings that we put up in the sukkah that are nice. I used to, when we first got married, I used to put our nicest artwork out there in the sukkah, and then it rained 1 year. And, so now I use like our lower level art, but to the degree that I can, we bring our sofa out there, right? We bring our dining room table out there. And we try as hard as we can to make it into our home. The reason for that is that the sukkah should feel like home base. That was it. You're anchored in the sukkah, you're anchored on a spiritual level, in that experience of being surrounded by Hashem's presence, comforted by Hashem, held by Hashem. That's the goal. That's the objects you place in the sukkah. What should you do in the sukkah? So I'll tell you the bare minimum, and I'll tell you what you should aspire to. Bare minimum is as follows. Any mizonos, right? So crackers, cookies, cake, or obviously sandwiches, bread, etc., you should have only in the sukkah. Okay? In other words, you'll find that in Eretz Israel, even if you're on a tiul, you will find sukkahs basically everywhere. Really, like you'll go to like a Shmurat HaTeva to go on a hike, and at the entrance to Shmurat HaTeva, they'll have a sukkah there. Right? So anything that's mizonos, you should eat in the sukkah. If you know you're not going to have a sukkah, what do you do? Huh? You can have anything that's shahakal, anything that's aids, anything that's adama, right? So, French fries, chicken wings, right? schnitzel, right? Anything that's not mizonos or hamotz you can have outside the sukkah, it's not ideal. Okay, we'll get to the aspiration in a second, but certainly if you know you're not going to have a sukkah available, that's a good solution. Number two, and this is the one that we don't really know about so much in the States or in Canada, is sleeping. Okay, there are foods you can eat outside the sukkah. This is not a chumrah. This is basic halacha. Even a tiny nap should be in the sukkah. The same way that theoretically a person might go to a restaurant for a meal, but except for my marashir, you don't really take naps outside of your bed, right? Right, you don't take naps outside your bed. Your home is where you sleep, right? So the halacha is that we sleep in the sukkah. Why don't we do that outside of Eretz Yisrael? So Mendel has a very, very good reason why Chabad Hasidim don't do it in the sukkah, and it's a reason that we should aspire to connect to, which is the Chabad Hasidim say that because of the unbelievable kedusha of the sukkah, where that this is the Anani Akavo, this is God's presence. How can you fall asleep there? Okay. If you have that problem, you can't fall asleep in the sukkah because you're so aware of Hashem's presence. Okay, so first of all, great job. And second of all, whatever, you can talk to one of your bim, and we can help you find a solution. Chabad Hasidim Masai, where they have the right to follow their minhag. But everyone else who follows the way that most of Am Yisrael has followed the halacha for thousands of years, the halacha is we sleep in the sukkah. In Canada, why don't we sleep in the sukkah? Okay, there are lots of mitzvos that are hard to perform.
It's not cold, it's just so many bees.
Okay, bees, cold. Yeah, so last time I checked, even if it's cold, you still have to hear shofar.
But it's very cold.
Beautiful.
Okay.
Correct, okay. So, let's get this clear. The fact that it's cold is not an excuse not to light Neros Chanukah, not an excuse not to hear shofar. Usually discomfort has nothing to do, right, with fulfilling mitzvah or not, right? Otherwise, Bris Mila would be out the window, right?
So
the reason why, when it's uncomfortable to be in the sukkah, you're allowed to eat in the house or sleep in the house, is because of this principle of teshuv. You have to dwell in the sukkah like your house. The moment the sukkah stops being comfortable, the moment that it becomes a pain to be in, so then it's not your house. What's the litmus test? The litmus test is that if the discomfort of being in the sukkah is such that if this were your house, you would check into a hotel room, or you would go to spend the night with your friends, then you should leave the sukkah. Okay? So if it's raining, and it's like a drop every 5 minutes, it's like, you know, a tiny little pitter-patter, right? A little refreshing, it's not bothering you so much. That's not a reason to leave the sukkah at all. If it's a downpour, right? If it's raining, you're getting soaked, your food is getting ruined, right? If that was your house, what would you do?
Leave.
You'd leave, right? If there's a swarm of bees that's taking up residence in your sukkah, and you're one of those guys like me, my wife is the one who kills bugs in my family. I didn't realize that would happen when I got married. I thought I'd be like the tough guy, but like that first time when like a spider was like in our living room, like I hid behind the couch, my wife like pulled off her shoe. Right? So then I realized like whatever. Anyway, you realize these things once you get married. So if you're one of those guys, you don't like having a swarm of bees over your head, and if that were your house, you'd leave, right? You can't handle that. So the same thing would apply to yourself. By the way, I had this idea once. It was a horrible idea. It was great at the time, but it didn't work out. I thought of this idea of beautifying the sukkah by stapling live sunflowers to the walls of the sukkah. It was beautiful, and the bees really enjoyed it. And I was right. So live flowers are not a good idea. Okay, so in Canada, there's a very legitimate reason not to sleep in the sukkah. If the weather is below zero, right, it's freezing cold. Again, you have to admit yourself. Some people don't mind the cold, right? Shragi doesn't mind the cold. So he would stay in his house.
It's never
right?
That cold. Where we live.
Okay, right? Depends. Right? In Houston, so sometimes there are hurricanes on the way, right? Yeah. And whatever it is, like, if you would leave your house, leave the sukkah also. Okay? Baruch Hashem, in Eretz Yisrael, that's not the case. Okay, if you build the sukkah properly, you have good walls, you have a good schach, you'll have enough shade. You should definitely bring a fan into the sukkah with you, and you'll be fine. Some people actually put air conditioning in the sukkah. You can aspire to that one day. There's zero reason not to sleep in the sukkah here in Eretz Yisrael. What do you do if you're going away for sukkahs? Right? So first of all, you might be surprised if your hosts might plan on sleeping in the sukkah. Right? If they don't, I would strongly recommend that you mention it to your hosts. If you don't mind, would you mind if I bring a mattress outside to the sukkah? Right? They may or may not think it's weird, but that's really the halakha. And to the degree that you can, you should do that. There's one other reason why people don't sleep in the sukkah, and this also has some legitimacy. There is an opinion that teshvu means that you should live exactly where you always live. If you're married, so sleep in the bedroom with your wife. Right? So the halakha is that women are not chayav to sleep in the sukkah. So if you're married, and your wife doesn't want to sleep in the sukkah for some reason, there are poskim who say that you don't have to sleep in the sukkah either, because sleeping in the sukkah without your wife is not the way you usually live. You follow? Right? Raise your hand if you're married here. Okay, so a few people might apply to, but otherwise, you know, in Yirtz Hashem, in the next few weeks you'll get married, but otherwise, that reason doesn't apply to you. Okay? So again, I promise you, if you take this mitzvah seriously, and you envelop yourself in it, right? You sleep in the sukkah, and you eat in the sukkah, and we'll get to the next thing in a second, you're going to experience the spiritual power of sukkahs in a way that you never encountered until now. Let's get it, begin to feel it. One last thing. It's not just the technical stuff of sleeping and eating. To the degree that you can, do everything in the sukkah. You like playing cards? Play cards in the sukkah. You like just hanging out and talk, shooting the breeze? Do that in the sukkah. The goal, one of the halachos is, you're mitayel the sukkah. Mitayel means you hang out. You hang out in the sukkah. Right? Whatever you would normally do in your dorm room, in your living room, back home, whatever it is, bring that to the sukkah. Why? What's the big picture? So, we threw a rough time over the past month. Right? Rosh Hashanah is a time of feeling insecure. Are we okay here?
Well, okay.
We've been through a time of trepidation, of fear, of not knowing whether or not we're in good standing with God, recognizing that we have veered off the path, wondering whether God's going to forgive us, knowing that we're facing din. That's a rough time, and it creates a feeling of distance. On Yom Kippur, Bezrat Hashem, tomorrow night, we're going to stand before God, and as long as we open our hearts to tshuva, Hashem's going to welcome us back in. Reb Boaz points out, for this a number of times, that the halacha of the sukkah, how many walls do you have to have?
Two and a tiny amount.
Okay, it's got to be a right angle, an angle, and then, one more little tefach extending out. That's what we need for the sukkah. What's the shape of that? An arm embracing you. Follow? Okay? The idea is that when you walk into the sukkah, you're walking to Hashem's heart. Hashem is welcoming you back home. You might have veered off the path. You might have messed up at different points during the year. You might feel like God has been distant to you. Yom Kippur is the time to come back home. And sukkah is the way that Hashem welcomes you back in with open arms. This is not just a spiritual idea for us right now. The origins of this idea go all the way back. And this, we'll end with this. All the commentators ask the question, why in the world is sukkah this time of year? If it's to remember the huts we dwelt in when we left Mitzrayim, what time of year would make sense? Right after Pesach, right? We should have Pesach for 7 days, and we should start into sukkah right away. That's when the sukkah began. So there are all kinds of explanations as to why it happened. The Vilna Gaon offers a mind-blowing idea. And it's based on the Midrash. He points out the following thing. Look at the back of the page, right, the Clouds of Glory page. So, the Torah describes the way that Moshe spoke to Am Yisrael about building the Mishkan. Okay? And he tells them, everyone begin gathering the materials, the gold, the silver, the cloth, etc., to build the Mishkan. When did that happen? Look at Rashi at the very bottom. Vayakel Moshe lemacharat Yom HaKippurim kishyarad min ha'har. The Mishkan was built in the aftermath of the Egel HaZahar. Okay? Am Yisrael totally messed up and betrayed God and betrayed the relationship to God, and they were on the verge of being severely punished. Moshe goes up when? To ask God for forgiveness. Rosh Chodesh Elul is when Moshe goes up. And he comes down. He attains full forgiveness. Hashem says, I will return my Shechina to dwell amongst Am Yisrael once more. He comes down on Yom HaKippurim. That is when Hashem says, Salachti ki barecha. That is when Hashem says, I will fully forgive Am Yisrael and rebuild the relationship with Am Yisrael. When is the Mishkan built? According to Chazal, and it makes sense in the Pesukim as well, the moment that Moshe Rabbeinu comes down from the mountain and tells Am Yisrael, Hashem has forgiven us, the next day, he begins telling them to bring the materials to build the Mishkan. The Mishkan took many, many months to build, almost 6 months to build, but the process of building the Mishkan began right then. They gathered the materials for 3 days. Okay, that brings us to, right, if it was the 11th of Tishrei that Moshe Rabbeinu commands them. Right? So the materials were gathered for 3 days, and when was the actual construction commenced? On the 15th. What's the 15th of Tishrei? Sukkot. Okay? So in many ways, building the Mishkan and building our Sukkot are exactly parallel. Right? On some level, the Sukkah is God's home, is built, so to speak, by God, the Anani HaKavod, right? That He invites us in. And it's parallel to when we invited Him in to the Mishkan that we built. You follow? Okay? Either way, the Sukkah is a symbol of our relationship with Hashem. I want to add a couple more halachot and then we'll end for the day. The first night of Sukkot is different from the rest of the week. The rest of the week, if it's raining, if there are mosquitoes, etc., and it's really bothering you, you're allowed to go inside. The first night, there's a connection to Leil HaSeder. In the same way that there's a mitzvah d'oraita to eat a kazayis, a matzah on Leil HaSeder, there's also a mitzvah d'oraita to eat a kazayis of bread in the sukkah. Okay? So that first night, even if it's raining, you have to eat in the sukkah at least that first kazayis. You'll make kiddush and hamotzi in the sukkah. The minhag is to wait a while, to wait about an hour or 2 hours to see if it stops raining. Okay? The reason for that is that according to some opinions, you're not allowed to say the bracha of Leishei Vesukkah if it's raining in the sukkah at the time. There are some people who say you should wait until midnight before you give up. Right? Basically, waiting an hour or 2 hours is a compromised position. It enables us to sort of try as hard as we can to get in the full-fledged mitzvah of sukkah. It also prevents us from starving to death and thereby losing the Simchas Yom Tov that we would have if we had a good meal. So if you've waited an hour and a half or 2 hours and it's still pouring rain outside, so then what do? You make kiddush and hamotzi in the sukkah, you have a kizayis, you think about Anani HaKavod, and then you go into the house and finish your meal there. If it stops, then you're in good shape. One last point. How many of you here ever, when you're, let's say, back home, your home in the States or in Canada, how many of you ever leave your house? Right, that's what I thought. Right. So too, you're allowed to leave the sukkah. Sukkah is not a jail cell. not a jail cell, it's a home base. Okay, so the same way that it's totally normal when you have a house, when you have a home, to leave home, so too it's totally normal to leave the sukkah. Okay? And the same way that occasionally you leave home, you'll have a snack outside of home, right? So there is an the bottom line halacha is that if you're traveling, then you do not have to eat in the sukkah. Okay? So if you are, you know, on a flight, someone has to fly, you know, on a business flight or to fly home for some reason in the middle of sukkahs, you can eat on the plane. That's fine, right? You have no access to a sukkah, and you're traveling, and it's normal to have a snack when you've left home. That's fine. Should a person plan a tiyul where you know for sure I will not have a sukkah for the next 3 days? What do you say? Technically, that probably would have a justification, right? The same way that if you have a house, sometimes you go to tiyul for 3 days, right? However, it's not certainly not the spirit of the. In other words, to do something to help you avoid a mitzvah is not ideal. Okay? In Eretz Yisrael, it's not going to be a problem anyway. You go to Tveria, you go to Eilat, wherever you go, you're going to see sukkahs. You're going to see sukkahs, you have the right to use them. It's a tremendous mitzvah to send the sukkah on in Eretz Yisrael. And it's an opportunity that we don't have in the States, not just to technically fulfill a mitzvah, but to fully immerse ourselves in a mitzvah. And if the more you contemplate it, the more you think about it, the more you spend time in it, the more you're going to grow to love and feel the joy of the fulfillment of the mitzvah. So, any questions before we wrap up? Okay. I want you to have a beautiful, beautiful sukkahs. If you have any questions, afterwards you're welcome to help me also. Okay, let me have a chance back this week.